We would like to acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the lands and waters where we're recording from, the Worimi and Wanarua peoples. We acknowledge the Worimi and Wanarua elders, both past and present.
Who is on the field for the Newcastle Knights? Darren Tracy's first touch of the footy. Now Andrew John. Tries a little hole himself. He's close. Right. Reaches out. That's a try to Andrew John. Bruce Brick from the little halfback. And that's a good reward for a great game in his debut match for the Newcastle Knights in first grade. Andrew John scores the try, and that should wrap it up for the night.
Coming to you live from Worimi and Wanarua lands, this is the Bay 53 podcast, part of the Sports Best Friends podcasting network with your friends Bretto and the K-Dog. Well, on the back of two losses in a row post the second bye, the Knights men's team head into a tough game away to the Panthers and probably a just as tough game away to the Bulldogs following that. We're languishing near the bottom of the table. It's another tough year, and yet where there's light, there's hope. So this episode, we try to forget as much as we can what's happening on field with the men, while we look more to the off-field stuff in terms of what's happening with the Newcastle Knights, and we really start to ask the question about what should fans come to expect, nay, even hope for, from the men's rugby league team and the rest of 2023. Bretto, the courageous losses are starting to pile up to the extent that I've probably written the men's team off this year. I know we've got 11 rounds left, but I think it's season over for the men, and they start working towards 2024.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I think that just about finished us off. I think, you know, I'm not saying that we're no hope, but yeah, it's pretty slim.
So I did a post from the Bay 53 Twitter account over the weekend, and I said, look, it's the lack of consistency that ultimately is doing this team in. And even if we put together a 2021 run at the end where we can string five games in a row to scrape into the finals, the problem with this team has now become, though, that when you have the expectation, right, well, now you're actually at a game where you have to win, there's no guarantees there. And in fact, this men's team has started to create such a pattern of underperforming that if they scrape into the eight, you're like, well, what difference does it make? Like, well, what point is it that this team should not be there to be making up numbers? They should be there to be contending for a premiership.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but I kind of come at it slightly differently. I actually think that if we snuck in because of a guy like KP in our team, we could actually spring a surprise in the first week.
Oh, look, I don't doubt your belief in the team whatsoever. I'm still old enough to remember in 2021 where you were convinced we could go on a 1997 style run to the trophy. So I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't disagree with the ability that, you know, I think there are very few people that love...
I'm delusional. Tell the people, you know it.
No. What I was going to say was, I think there are very few people that love Andrew Johns more than me, but I accept that you probably love KP a lot more than I do. So I absolutely accept that you probably see that that talent there. But again, we're back to where we sort of always seem to land with the Newcastle Knights men's team, in that you're not clutching at straws, but you're looking for that great white hope again, for lack of a better term. And again, it just rests on one player. And I'm like, we always talk about the Newcastle Hunter region, you know, rugby league heartland. And why are we still again at this stage where we're hoping for this 25-year-old from North Queensland to work his magic, to get something happening for this team? Like, it shouldn't be like that.
You know what has disappointed me, Bart? Like, to me, coming into this season, I thought the strength of our team was the middle. It's actually been our weakness. The difference makers have actually made the difference. KP, since he's been back, has been sensational. Bradman has been really, really good. We found this great diamond in Greg Marjorie on the wing. Dom's had, you know, some really exciting moments and, you know, won us some games with his brilliance. Jacko's been solid at seven. We found a competent six. Yeah, the Brails thing obviously hurts us, no doubt about that. And Phoenix tries his guts out, but he's not Brails. But our middle has been so poor at times this year. And that, to me, has been the disappointing thing. The thing that I thought was our strength is actually, you know, and it definitely cost us on the weekend. There's no doubt at all, if our middles played better on the weekend, we would have won comfortably.
You and I were sitting, like, from Bay 53, you could see the chasm, like, just this gaping wide hole in that ruck defence where Jacob Saifidi was supposed to be for the second try. You could see it so, like, you could see it so wide, you almost thought that there were no players on the park because it was such a massive gap of just open space. Like, the play actually
happened
about...
Do we think it's a concentration thing with Jacob? 100%. I've never seen 100%. A guy with his best and his worst are so far apart.
Yeah. There was just so much space. Like, it was 30 metres away from us. We could have run from that hole. Like, they created... just given such a big opening. And even with the first try that the Roosters scored, again, just that weak defence and open... You sort of... I was just confused. I was too confused to actually be upset about how poor the defence had been. And I was so confused because it was so poor, I actually didn't expect it to happen again. That's why the second one was so infuriating, because the first lapse in defence was so bad, you just assumed, well, they can't possibly do that again. And not only did they repeat it, but it was even lazier. Weird tries.
Yeah, and that's what disappointed me. It was the way we conceded. They threw very little at us. We, you know, from 90% of all the ball they had in that first half, 90% of the time we had them controlled comfortably. They never looked like scoring. And three times we just lost our heads in letting three soft tries.
It's funny as well because the three tries that we let in were the antithesis of how hard – well, first of all, how lucky the Broncos had to be with a couple of their tries, but then how hard the Broncos had to work to put four tries on it. Like, I'm talking about that. That's what actually made the lapses in defence against the Roosters at home even more infuriating, is because you look at the way the Broncos had to score against us the week before, and like that Ezra Mann. So I travelled up to Brisbane and I was on the 10-metre line at ultimately the end where the game-winning try was scored. And that last try was just so out of the blue, unbelievable, just magic happening in front of you. I was too deflated to even be devastated by it, because I was like, well, what can you do about that? So you take the performance against the Broncos the week before, where they had to scrap and scrape and just, and you know, so much had to go their way to get tries on the field. 7 days later, or 8 days later, 8 days later, we're just giving it up to the Roosters. And again, that's like that consistency that I'm talking about. You just, it's the Wayne Bennett syndrome. And 10 years later, we're still talking about it. You do not know which men's team is going to turn up from week to week. And it's just devastating to watch as a fan.
I look at that and go through the idea that the Roosters are the worst attacking team in the competition. They had, yeah, obviously Luke Keary for a little bit, but then lost him. They then have the top tier halves combination of Sandor, Smith, and Drew Hutchinson. and just wonder how you concede at all. And as I said, for most of the game, we didn't look like conceding because they offered nothing. And we just handed tries. And I look at some of the guys in that team and I wonder, it's just like some of those guys that work their backsides off, like it must break their heart. You know, they work so hard for the full 80 minutes, and just there's guys in that team that don't care enough for long enough and just give up soft efforts. Like I can imagine, you know, in the video sessions, there must be some choice words said, because there's no way I'd be able to hold my tongue.
Would there be?
I think so. I think so. Okay. I think there's no way a guy like an Adam Elliott type, those sort of guys, would be able to sit in a video session and watch Jacob Saifidi's efforts and just not say anything. You couldn't. Like, how could you? Like, you're busting your butt. You know, you're hurting your body every week. You know, you had to pay for this the rest of your life, the pain you go through, just to see guys that don't care. And I don't care what you say. Like, it's concentration, sure. And he might say he cares, but you can't care when you put up two efforts like that and you've been doing it now for 6 years in first grade.
It's funny what you mentioned about the idea of, you know, words being spoken to your teammates.
I want to talk a little bit more about the Broncos game, if only because of the two losses. That's probably the more positive outcome of the two. In fact, you know, that's one of the reasons we sort of went into the Roosters game simultaneously confident because of what we'd done against the Broncos, but then with no confidence because we know it's the Newcastle Knights. But it's funny what you say about the idea of the reactions towards your teammate, because I want to, as we always do, highlight Kalen Ponga wherever I can. And Kalen's always been the player that cops the knock about not caring enough about the team or being a bit of a soft pushover. Well, I'll tell you what, on up in Brisbane, he was not backwards in going forwards to let Jackson Hastings know how poor his effort was to let in the Broncos, I think, third try. And that's the sort of leadership that, funnily enough, for someone as weirdly unpopular as Kalen, doing something that unpopular towards probably the most liked player in the team, that's the sort of stuff you want to be seeing from him in terms of if he really wants to be the leader that he thinks he is of this team.
Yeah, and I think that that's not natural for Kalen, because I don't think Kalen's the sort of guy, you know, he's not a skill teacher, you know, he's not the sort of guy that can rouse on someone because, you know, that's not him. But I think he's sick of losing. He's in the press conference. He's so deflated by losing that he's just like, he gets to the point now where he just goes, well, I'm just going to give it to him. You know, and when we, you know, he gets paid huge amounts of money. But let's not forget, that guy is one bad head knock away from some serious issues, you know. And he's probably thinking, look, I'm busting my butt here to win. Now I'm putting my body on the line for you guys. And if people say he doesn't, but let's face it, that try that just before halftime that was overturned, that was all Kalen. Kalen put his body in front of the guy, got under the ball, and saved that try. There was three other guys there that were not stopping him. I think Kalen is so sick of losing that his natural competitive instinct is starting to come out. And as much as he's not that, you know, that rah-rah type of guy, he can't help himself.
It's actually really funny what you do say about Kalen in terms of he's sick of losing. He won six club games in the last 2 years. So since round one last year, he has won six club games out of, I think, it can't be more than maybe 25, 26 games. And you're right. Like, at the end of the day, he is a competitor. We, you know, we see the way that he sort of rises for State of Origin, but he can't be happy with what's going on at Newcastle. And everybody does point to the, oh, well, you know, you're getting paid millions of dollars, you should be happy. But there's one thing we've learned about sport is that at the end of the day, while these guys get paid a lot for what they do, the money actually, funnily enough, is not the true competitors. It's not what drives them. The money is the good stuff for your battlers who are like, oh, I'm just glad I've got a first grade contract. But even then they're like, well, great, I can put my bet. But the ones who the reason they're the highest paid players is because they are competitors and they want to win. And when they're not winning, they are just blokes you don't want to be around.
And no one wants to be like, Kalen doesn't want to get to the end of his career and everyone look back and go, well, there's a guy that, you know, that he was had elite talent, but never won a final, never won a premiership, you know, like that's at 25 now. He's never, you know, he won one as a bit part fill-in winger at the Cowboys, you know, big deal. But in terms of Kalen being Kalen, he's never won a final. It's, I don't think, you know, he's not going to, I don't think he wants to be that guy to get to the end of his career and look back and just wasted years at the dross that is now the Newcastle Knights.
I'll tell you why I really do see the competitor in Kalen Ponga is that I think for the last 2 weeks he's been the best player in rugby league, probably in the world. And I think because I was really nervous going into the Brisbane game, because look, let me tell you something. I've been to four events of rugby league, as it were, at Suncorp Stadium. Can I tell you something? Magic Round doesn't count. Magic Round is not a Suncorp Stadium experience. Magic Round is a great experience, and I do highly recommend it to everybody to join us next year when we head up there for the festivities. But in terms of it being a Suncorp Stadium event, I've been to two in my life. The first one was Game 3 in 2003 State of Origin when New South Wales had the series wrapped up. I think we lost that game 36-6. Ferocious atmosphere. I still to this day think about this prick who was sitting next to me going for Maroons. He fucking gave it to me all night. It was simultaneously one of the best and worst experiences of sport I've ever had. But let me tell you something. This crowd that I was sitting amongst, 35,000 odd, For the Broncos. It's the first Broncos game I've ever been to where it's been their game at Suncorp, because I've obviously seen them as the away team in Magic Round. Holy shit, man. You have not experienced intimidation from a home crowd until you've been to a Suncorp Stadium game for the Broncos. I can't think of the words that can adequately describe how genuinely afraid I was at times for my own well-being. And I'm including the young girl who was sitting next to me, who was ready to rip and tear the nanosecond she thought something was going to go against her team, the Broncos. So that's a setting, right? So you've got that background there. Kalen Ponga, the way he played in front of that crowd, and let me tell you something, the Queensland spirit is 100% a myth. That is 100% a myth. Every single one of those Broncos fans in the crowd were waiting for him to get knocked out. They were even saying, knock him out. There was some father sitting behind me who was saying, oh, how's your head, you fairy? And I sort of looked at him and he didn't say too much for the rest of the game. But every single one of them wanted his head on a stick. So when he absolutely smoked Reece Walsh to score that individual try, you better believe the K-Dog was on his feet giving it to every single Broncos fan who was sitting around me within earshot. And that was the moment when I just had the absolute confidence that Kalen Ponga really does want to deliver for the Newcastle Knights, because if ever he was going to fold, that was the occasion.
Yeah, and it's funny, because every time Kalen gets in that sort of space, he always is looking for support. And he did it on Saturday. We bombed the try because he didn't go himself. But you could just, the moment he hit that hole, he looked up and seen Reece Walsh at Suncorp Stadium. Mm. He was never doing anything else but burning him. Like, it just, if you go back and look at that, he gives half a look to Bradman, like not even half a look, just like, oh, you're there in case I desperately need you. But his eyes are focused on Reece Walsh going, I am going to make you look like a clown.
And that's exactly what he did. In fact, Kalen was playing he played so well that night, and this is how good his game was. By the end of it, when he wasn't the key focus of attack to try and get us some sort of miraculous after the siren win off the scrum, that's how well he was playing. And the reason I point that out is there have been games where he's tried things on, it hasn't worked for him, and people are like, oh, Kalen's not too good. But there was genuinely an expectation of him in that Broncos game that he might deliver. And of course, as we, I had to watch Broncos fans celebrate the fucking result twice because they gave the Knights a sort of second chance. Mate, I think the less said about the Roosters game, the better. One thing you and I did want to talk about, though, a little bit was, the club in general, the men's team, where's it sort of at? And one of the things that you and I had sort of been discussing over the weekend, certainly post-loss as we, tried to pick the pieces up, is that, so that's the second year, that's the second time this year where the Knights have put in this incredible performance against the odds, a team that's in the top four, where we've led for the majority of the game only to lose it at the death, but then followed it up by playing a team that is genuinely inferior than us, at the time, and yet we followed it up with a 2-point loss. So that's two times in a row. That's two times this season, four losses in total. Can I ask you something? Is that this Newcastle Knights men's team? Like, are those four losses, as opposed to the 5.5 games that we've sort of got on the board from a wins and a draw? Are those losses more of an encapsulation of this men's team than the wins are?
Yeah, but I'll go the other way and go, I think they're an indication of how close we are.
Yeah.
In terms of the old Knights, you're right. We play well against a really good team, just don't quite get the money, then we get beat the next week. But the old Knights would not only not get beat, not win the next week, they would get smashed because they wouldn't turn up.
Mm.
Like, we're so close to being, even if you win two of those four games, we're in the eight comfortably.
So what was the stat that Harvey G was telling us about?
So five times this year, four times we've scored equal tries and lost. In the Penrith game, we scored more tries and lost. So you've got to think, in a normal situation, you win probably three of those five. Three more wins gets us on the edge of the top four.
And it's like you said, like wins and losses tell a story, but they don't tell the same story every year. And we've sort of been looking at the team in terms of the way we think they're performing, you know, the close losses they've had versus the good wins that they've had. You could make the argument that in a lot of ways, this Newcastle Knights men's team is actually the best it's been under Adam O'Brien. And yet Adam O'Brien had those 2 years where he was taking teams to the finals. Like they were very rarely sort of outside or not close to the eight. But you could almost make the argument that the way the team is performing at the moment, forget the wins and the losses column, but the performance itself is providing, showing a team that's potentially the best Adam O'Brien team we've had so far.
Yeah, so in both of those years, especially in the COVID year when it was up in Queensland, we won all the close games. We sort of covered the pavement over the cracks, and it was told as our differential. You know, like we were a team that had won as much as we lost, and had a well over 100, maybe close to 200 negative differential. This year, we're five wins, one draw, eight losses. We're minus 30, which shows we've almost had double the amount of losses to wins, and we're only minus 30. You know, we're losing a lot of close games. To me, that's the improvement. I think this team this year has performed better than either of those two teams. But those two teams, because of a guy like Mitch Pearce in the side, we had, you know, Caelan was goal kicking well. We had other guys who could goal kick. You know, we were getting over the line. I don't know what the difference was, but we were just getting over the line. And we'd scrape into the finals, you know, and we were sort of, we're a finals team. Last year was last year. Yeah, the whole thing was a disaster. But I actually think this year's performances are better than either 2020 or 2021.
So where does that leave us then?
If we finish the season off. If this continues.
Of course, yeah.
You know, we're still a long way to go. Yeah.
So just quickly on that, where are we actually? Because we're 14th on the ladder. And in fact, the bye points are actually probably... Yeah, funnily enough, the bye points are probably actually keeping us. The bye rounds really this year have. I don't understand.
Oh, we're better than the teams below us. They're better than Dogs, Tigers, Dragons. They're not. We're better than all that. Let's not pretend. Okay. Whatever bye points, but it doesn't matter. We're better than those.
Okay, so we're 14 rounds into the season. 14 games, sorry, into the season. So I've got 10 more games to go. Now, funnily enough, I didn't bank on us winning the Roosters game when I did my prediction earlier this year. Like I said, so for me, funnily enough, we're still on target to be half a win better than I predicted. I predicted we'd get 12 wins, 12 losses. I didn't factor in the Roosters game, but the reason for me that I've sort of written us off after the Roosters game is that this Roosters team is terrible. Like they are just nowhere near that. I had the Roosters in the top three to finish the season. And I just think to myself, if we can't win those games, I actually am, because I've got us beating the Storm at home.
And you're wrong. We're going to get, I'm telling you now,
I'm not confident in that at all. But so we've got 10 more games to go. Okay, so do you think this team is capable of winning 7 out of their last 10 games to make the 8?
No.
Yeah. It's really starting to look like it starts to get beyond them.
And that's the problem with doing preseason predictions, because you look at it, you know, in the preseason, you go, the Dolphins, you know, we'll beat them at home, then we'll beat them away. Well, we're unlikely to beat the Dolphins. I know it's in Perth, but we're probably going to lose that because we travel so poorly. You know, whereas in the preseason, that's penciled on, Dolphins will beat them. You know, as you said, you penciled Melbourne in, but I don't think that's going to thing. We've lost so many, like the Cowboys. We had the Cowboys at their lowest point and we blew it. They're starting to come good, you know. Like we had so many chances this year to nail points now. We really should be sitting on the edge of the top four. Because the draws fall our way. We've got quite a lot of teams at their weakest point. We got Manly without Origin players, we've got the Roosters without Origin players and other injuries. Now we've had a really solid draw like that.
I just love the game. But more than that, I love the community. If you're a fan of rugby league or the NRL, you'll love Big T's Tees. unique, affordable, and made for fans. Find a link to the online store in the show notes below. You'd look good in one of Big T's tees.
Okay, with all of that in mind then, we're unlikely to make finals this year. You and I have already said, you know, season's done. We need to start winning as much as we can this year, but with an eye more on next year as opposed to doing anything this year. Where does that leave Adam O'Brien? Adam O'Brien has been a man under pressure from the absolute moment we started shitting the bed like there was no tomorrow last season, for a season that we thought we'd be top four and we ended up being bottom four. Adam O'Brien is a man who's under so much pressure to keep his job. The first question really is, does the club stick with Adam O'Brien come round one 2024?
Yes. Unless we lose 10 straight to finish the season, he's the coach next year.
And it's fairly unlike, if as you and I believe, this team is performing at the level that we think they are, notwithstanding the wins and losses, then yeah, you're right. They should still pick up a few more wins this year, at the very least to finish in the top 10. But the thing about Adam O'Brien is that you sort of start looking, well, what does he need to do next year to maintain his job? And here's the question is that, if Adam O'Brien makes it to next year and then we get rid of him, that's 5 years that we've had of Adam O'Brien and we have to start again in 2025. And you know, the Newcastle Knights at the end of the day, you know, we can't keep resting on the, oh, well, you know, we've been waiting for the golden. We've had more than enough time to get our ducks in a row, to get our house in order to be the premiership threat that we should be, and we're still not. So what is the club? What should we as fans be expecting and hoping for the club to do this year to make us first of all want to come back next year with some hope, but then also to think, yeah, good times are coming for this men's team? Because they've shown they can do it for the women's team. Hey, they've done everything exactly right in terms of how to recruit a good women's team, and we're going into the NRLW as defending premiers. Well, Wilkins
said the women's team are good like the golden generation of the men's team were, because they have an immortal at seven.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but we've got, you know, we've got a potential immortal at number one in Kalyn Ponga. What does Adam O'Brien start doing now with this team to bring that belief back, to say the good times are coming again?
What I will say is that Adam O'Brien, in my opinion, and this is just my personal opinion, has actually showed he can coach in terms of guys that he's brought through. So the guys that have come through, so you got your Safidis and all that are Brown guys. And, you know, I know they've also been around with Adam a lot. But the guys that Adam has brought through, guys that Adam has recruited, I think he's done a pretty good job. You know, that we've seen guys seem to be coming into first grade now ready for first grade. We had that one against the Dolphins where we had a lot of, you know, they were children. They were never going to play first grade other than the fact we had an injury crisis. But the guys that have come to first grade because, you know, Adam O'Brien has given them a chance. You know, your Jack Johns. Like, Jack Johns never looked like a first grader. He looks like a first grader to me. Dylan Lucas was a winger centre until 2 months ago. He's coming to first grade on an edge starting and not looked out of place. You know, like, we'll all be happy if Dylan Lucas started round one next year, I think. Adam O'Brien is doing an okay job. The question is, is Adam O'Brien a good enough tactician to make the team win? I think in terms of making the team competitive, he's done a really good job. The question is, can he get over the hump and then become a winning team? So I think that this year needs to go as it is now. If this year continues as now, you know, we win games, you know, we have some good wins, we have some close losses, you know, the odd bad performance, his job's fine. You know, we'll all be disappointed, but the job's fine. Next year, it has to be in the finals. He doesn't keep his job past next year. He doesn't make the finals. And that's okay, because he's contracted next year. No one's going to steal him. The club don't need to renew him until, you know, the season's nearly done. So that's fine. But if he does go, if we don't make the finals next year and he does go, we have to recruit. The next coach has to come from within. It has to come from, we cannot start again. We cannot bring a new coach in with new philosophies, with new ideas, with new way he wants to run the club ever again for the next 20 years. The next coach has to come from within the organisation, has to. Like, I'm saying has to. We cannot start again. 2016 is, what, 8 seasons ago now. If we go, you know, by the time next season around, that'd be 9 seasons since 2016, and we could be back there again. If Adam O'Brien goes and we get a new coaching completely, because I'll do what Brandy did. They will rip the roster apart. Because that's what young coaches do. Young coaches come in and rip the roster apart because they know they've got 2 or 3 years to start again. Look at Cameron Serralde. He ripped the Dogs roster apart with Gus, and they've gone backwards really quickly. We cannot get a new coaching.
All right, so let's look internally then. The first three names that come to mind are Blake Green, Rory Cost-Jason, and Ron Griffiths. Now, I personally think it does a disservice to the NRLW team to take Ron. I think Ron should be given the opportunity to run that team for the next 2 years.
That's Ron's choice, but I think the club would sit down with Ron and say, look, mate, you know, Adam's gone. It's up to you. You could be the NRLW coach till the end of time if you like. Or if your ambition is to be the men's coach, because let's be honest, the men's coach makes a crap load more money than the women's coach does, and that's the commercial reality of life. You know, Ron can set up his family by coaching a men's team for 3 or 4 years.
Yep.
But Ron should get first right of refusal, I think.
If Ron decides to stick with the NRLW, then Blake Green or Rory?
Blake Green would be my choice, 100%.
Now, you mentioned this to me on Saturday, and I've got to be honest with you. It did stop me in my tracks a little bit, because I hadn't for a second. I hadn't even considered the Blake Green. I genuinely thought Blake Green was doing the Alfie Langers. He was happy to have his trainer's job. He was just glad that he was doing something post-rugby league. And, yeah, he's got a lot to add when it comes to attacking prowess and being a part of the setup. He was like, great, I could be like Alfie and do this for the next 20 years. So I was shocked when you said to me, he has head coach potential there that we would be crazy to let go.
Our improvement in our attack, the structure and how we attack, we can all see it. You know, the Mealy game actually at Mudgee was a really good example. Yeah, we scored those tries down the blind and those sort of plays. That's Blake Green. He runs. To say he runs the attack's probably not fair, because there's multiple guys have input. Joey's one, you know, I'm sure. But in terms of the main structures, that's Blake Green. If you watch him, he's got his little blue shirt on. He does the Alfies, you're right. But you watch him in games. You watch him in game situations. So if he's sitting on the sideline, you know, and maybe someone's, you know, just about to score or whatever, and the game's in a situation, it's Blake Green there that'll have, whether he's got a player next to him or he's got one of the other runners and he's to pass on an instruction or whatever, Blake Green is the one pointing, you know, shouting, you know. Blake Green runs that team on game day.
Mm.
Which is how Craig Bellamy did it. Craig Bellamy did that for Wade Bennett. Craig Bellamy started running water for Wade Bennett and then went from that up into the box and then become Craig Bellamy.
One of the things that sort of inspired you and I to have a chat about this evening was, funnily enough, Alex McKinnon, who we probably disagreed with a little bit in terms of some of his post-employment commentary when it comes to the Knights. But he said something that was very – he wrote something for Fox that was actually very consistent with what Ben Darwin might say. And, in fact, you yourself have just sort of said now, which is that – the Knights need to ignore the mounting external pressure on Adam O'Brien and stay with him. And the simple thing is that the constant change that this club has experienced over the past 10 years, it's horrific. And before I get into the numbers, you know, I'm quite mindful of what Ben said to us last year, which is that, you know, what players need is consistency. They need something. They need a stable environment. And when you're constantly changing not only the players around them, but the leadership around them as well, you know, they start to second guess themselves, and they sort of start to look left and right. And they don't know. Now, Alex has pointed out the Newcastle Knights in the last 10 years have had 4 heads of performance, 3 general managers, and support staff just like a rotation, just going through the club. And you, funnily enough, you think to it and you're like, yeah, that's not good. Like, that's just not a state. And we often say, think about it as if it's your work environment. Like, can you imagine working in an environment where your boss is different from one year to the next, where, you know, so many support staff that you, because the thing about new staff in a workplace is that you have to spend a lot of initial time bringing them up to speed. And yeah. when you're constantly doing that over a 10-year period, you're putting so much effort into trying to get everyone on the same page that once someone leaves again, you're wasting effort on that instead of working towards what you should be, which is winning a premiership.
And that's where I will, and I went hard on Jacob earlier, that's where I will give the Safidis a break. Those guys have been here since 2016 in first grade.
Yes.
They've gone through yes. all that, you know. And the main thing with those two boys is they're big guys that are, you know, that are naturally a bit pudgy, and, you know, and getting their bodies in shape was a real thing for them. So they've all those different heads of performances, they all have different philosophies. So every 2 or 3 years, they're getting a different guy in there retelling, well, this is how I want you to build your body. This is how I want you to build your body. You know, they're getting, you know, they've gone through their entire first grade career. There's different voices in their ears saying, well, this is what you need to do to be how we want you. And then that guy goes, someone else comes in, does a completely different philosophy. So those guys, you know, just in their confidence in their bodies must be, you know, it must be in their head. So that's, it's not good. Like, the idea that your head of performance changes every 2 or 3 years is the worst possible situation, because that's why we have injury crisis, because there's no consistency in how they train.
Now, I'm going to ask you a hard question before Matt Clark does, because you've sort of said that, Adam O'Brien has to fall off a cliff because we've seen enough improvement despite finishing lower on the ladder for him to be justified to have next year again, which will give him 5 years. How come we weren't giving the same?
Next year will be five. What brand?
Next year will be five. Yeah. You and I, though, halfway through 2019, were happy to see the back of Nathan Brown. And Nathan Brown had actually, the team had improved. We'd gone from a one-win season to being there or thereabouts competing for finals by the end of 2019. Why were we, you and I, happy to say catch a brownie at the end of 2019, but Fred O'Brien, oh, look, you know, the ladder position has gotten worse. We'll give you a fifth year. You deserve that. That reeks of hypocrisy. And you and I love to be hypocritical, don't get me wrong, but when it comes to the matter, we're very critical of Nathan Brown and we're very supportive of Adam O'Brien, and I think that deserves a wider explanation than simply vibes or simply saying, oh, you know, times have changed.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. Massive hypocrite. Huge. I've not denied it. Go after me on Twitter if you need to. So
it's the funnest part of being on social media is saying one thing and then saying it completely differently the next week. Fuck off if you don't love it.
So my whole thing is Brownie set himself up for that response to the club. His exact words were, 2016, we won't win. 2017, we'll win a little bit, but still not win much. 2018, we'll be competitive. 2019, we'll be a finals team. By the end of 2019, we were getting 40-odd put on us by a poor Tigers team at Campbelltown. The team was going backwards rapidly. And everyone's going to say, well, what about last year, the Knights? You're right. I 100% agree. But Adam O'Brien had the credit in the bank of two finals campaigns the 2 years previously. This year, anyone that doesn't say that this year's been a vast improvement on last year was the outlier. See, we had a finals campaign in 2020. We had a finals campaign in 2021. 2022 was a disaster. 2023 is no disaster. It's not what we wanted, but this team is competitive. You know, we've seen, we're very close to being a good team and we're not quite there. Understandable frustration. Next, as I said, the next year he has to make the finals or he's gone. But this year gets you next year, surely. Whereas at the end of 2019, Brownie's team were getting you're at the game like 2019 at Campbelltown when the time that was the worst night's performance in the history of the club. So I've never seen a first grade team care so little. The Tigers were literally running around in circles, and we were chasing them. It was hilarious how bad it was. He had to go.
Myself and my cousin were at Campbelltown with his Canadian girlfriend, and her laughter still rings in my ears to this day. But I'll never forget this.
They absolutely clowned us.
Yeah, and I'll never forget this to this day. And I'm obviously only speculating here. I don't know David Clemmer from a bar of soap. But I still remember to this day that he had a breakaway and an opportunity to score a try. And he was going to score a try. And I swear he actively slowed down because he detested the coach so much.
Yep.
He actually didn't want to give him the satisfaction of scoring what would have been his first try for the Newcastle Knights. And it's the first time I've, with my own eyes, despite what anybody, not needed to be prodded by anybody else, but been able to see with my own eyes, see a team that actively went, we don't want to play, and we just do not want to play for
If you said any Knights fan in that team that year, who are the two, if you can only keep two players in this team for next year, who are they? Caelan Ponga, David Clemmer, everyone, that would be the answer. There's no doubt. Mm. And those two guys detested the coach. The coach has got to go. It's professional sport. You can say, well, man up, you're getting paid, play the game. Understandable. But that's not reality of life. Those two guys had to stay at the club for this club to be competitive. And if Browning stayed, those two guys were out the door.
All right. So can I ask you this thing? Because the first part of in terms of why we see fit to give Adam O'Brien the further opportunity, the fifth year opportunity that we thought Nathan Brown didn't deserve. One of the reasons is we do think performances have improved. Certainly from 2019, we do think even definitely from 2022, possibly even from 2021. But the second part to that is that I still believe that the players want to play for Adam O'Brien. Now, look, in the age of professional sport, where you sort of say, well, that shouldn't be an issue anymore. You're right, it shouldn't be. They're paid to play well no matter what. But we live in the reality where in sport, that matters. And Wayne Bennett is the proof, the final exhibit of that. He has never gone to a club. Even the Knights, despite his shit record at the Knights, every single one of our players wanted to play for him. He always gets the best out of players. So the fact that we think these players still want to play for Adam O'Brien, I think is a huge feather in his cap, despite the way results have gone last year and this year.
You know what I've really, really thought about this since we discussed earlier about, you know, what we're going to talk about tonight. And you did mention, you know, like when we talk about, you know, what no Brian to stay, the first thing's going to be you massive hypocrite pricks because you wanted Brownie gone. And I've been thinking about it ever since then. The first thing in my head was, Caelan stings. When Caelan sits there next to Adam O'Brien at those press conferences and as he's looking disappointed and he's going through, you know, what didn't go right and how he's... And then people say he doesn't take accountability. That's bullshit. If you think Adam O'Brien takes accountability, you don't watch the presses because he blames himself all the time.
Mm.
He doesn't make stupid frigging dick jokes like Nathan Brown did. And I don't care what you say about Brownie accountability. Brownie was a friggin' shit out in the press conferences. But anyway, let's go. But anyway, I'm a hater.
We just lost LV. I don't know what's happened to LV on Twitter. He's definitely switched off now.
But Caelan sits there and stings because to me it says Caelan wants to play for him. I don't know the relationship between the two guys. I don't know. Caelan might hate him. I don't know. But it doesn't look like to me it looks like Caelan wants to win for him. And I care what you say at this club. Who Caelan Ponga will give everything for is who we need in charge. Because I'm telling you now, guys, without Caelan Ponga in this club, we are going to be worse than the West Tigers.
All right, so we're going to talk a little bit more about Adam O'Brien as well, at least in the context of the, and I coined the phrase sharticle. I don't think that got the love on Twitter that it deserved.
I appreciate it.
I know you do, Bretta. You love me. The sharticle that was based around the words of Buzz Rothfield, the idea that, because we lost, obviously the players are shagged off with Adam O'Brien because he's shown double standards in terms of punishing Greg Marju when he didn't punish Caelan Ponga and Kurt Mann. And here's the thing. I tweeted from the pod account. I said, I don't blame Buzz Rothfield for what he wrote. It's like that fable where you can't blame a snake for biting you. That's what they do. Buzz Rothfield writes garbage. We know this. You shouldn't be upset about that anymore. I was more upset about the fact that the Knights, you know, that article was off the back of a 2-point loss in a game that we should have won. And we opened ourselves up to it. But let's deconstruct how shithouse that article is. So the first idea is that Adam O'Brien is exhibiting double standards by punishing Greg Marshall and not punishing Kalen Ponga and Kurt Mann. All right. Couple of things there. Ba-bow. What Kalen Ponga and Kurt Mann were injured. They couldn't play. You can't not play someone who's already not playing because you want to punish them. What were they going to do? Wait until they were injured so that they could say to the players, you guys don't get to play now?
Let's not forget they had permission to go out.
Yes.
The club admitted they had permission to go out.
Yeah. So that's the first part. Now, the second part about this, and we're going to talk about this a fair bit in terms of in broader terms, is that what's being overlooked in all this is that the punishment didn't come from Adam O'Brien. And I think that is a critical element that we're going to talk about at length after this break.
You are listening to the Bay 53 podcast.
Okay, we're back after that. Did you like that, Brett? I tried to be a little bit more professional. Normally we just cut to a break, but did you like how I sort of said, oh, we're going to go to a break now? I want to heighten the anticipation of what we're about to discuss. No, I think the reason we needed to take a break there as well was that one of the reasons you and I wanted to do this as well is that there are two things we do want to talk about tonight in terms of information that we've sort of gotten. And we trust this information in terms of the discussion we want to have around them. One does relate to the Greg Marshall incident. Another one is a little bit of rumor that I think is just curious in terms of an interesting discussion point. But the information that we've been given about the Greg Marshall thing, and this sequence of events is really important, is that the decision to not wait for Greg Marshall came from Peter Parr. And Peter Parr actually, it's not like it hit whatever the time was, 9 o'clock in 1 second. He's like, right, everyone go, we'll leave. They actually did wait around for Greg. And what we now know is that Greg was never getting that bus. He missed the plane. He had to make his own way. Greg was fucked. But the information that we've gotten is that actually Peter was the one who said, all right, well, he's got 2 minutes or we're leaving. To which Peter was told, well, you can't do that. He's like, I've got news for you and it's all bad. Yes, I can do that because that's exactly what we're going to do.
As the boss of the club, guess what?
And that's exactly right. That's what they did do. And it's funny because that is something that I'd be very surprised that he had to deal with when the North Queensland Cowboys were contending for premierships with Jonathan Thurston. I'll bet they were all making the bus. But this is an opportunity for Peter Parr to say to the players, we have standards now. And the thing is, he'd already shown them last year.
Brabham and Inari got the same punishment for the same crime.
So this is not a new occurrence. But Peter
Parr... Brisbane, same game.
But Peter Parr has taken it upon himself to say, these are the standards now that you need to be aware of. And Adam O'Brien even related. He said, we want to bring junior players into a strong professional environment with standards. So we know now that the decision to not wait for Greg has come from this head of performance who's coming in to say, this is how you want to win a premiership, by maintaining these standards. Because the idea is that if you can't be trusted to be at a bus on time, how can we be sure that you'll be on the field making an important last-ditch tackle on time or being in the right spot? They're learning behaviours off the field that they should be taking onto the field with them. Now, that's the first part.
Can I just say something in relation to the Cowboys part of that? Yeah, so Jonathan Thurston, as we all know, was the wild child. It wasn't until Jonathan Thurston got his shit together, the Cowboys started becoming the Cowboys. You know, they were, even early, like they, 2005, yeah, but that was a miracle sort of, you know, situation. For after 2005, they were pretty ordinary for quite a while because Thurston wasn't Thurston. You know, he was the player he was, but they didn't have the standards they had. Michael Morgan and then Tamalolo and those guys, Matt Scott, eventually, you know, got those standards of that club where it was second nature. To me, I hope that Kalen watches Parry and goes, so that's what the boss expects. Well, I'm the captain. That means I've got to expect that from my players. And I've got to tell them, boys, this is how we're doing it. Because I guarantee you, Jonathan Thurston and Michael Morgan will say that to Cowboys players.
So that's the first part in terms of what led to the punishment. What we now know as well is that it was actually the players, that it was the leadership group that said, well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander as well. You dropped Inari and Bradman last year. The same punishment applies here. And Greg Marju has been, he's contending for our player of the season. He has been that amazing this year.
If he played on Saturday, we probably win. That's how important that decision was.
Right, which is where I'm ultimately going with this. And the leadership group, it's a player's decision that they've recommended that this player be dropped. And who's the guy left in the middle that needs to make a decision on this, that's coaching for his career, that knows wins and losses, regardless of performance, are what going to determine whether he's a head coach in the NRL or not? Adam O'Brien. And Adam O'Brien is faced with the choice of having to maintain these standards that his head of performance is saying we have to maintain, that the leadership group says we have to put in place, or he's like, but I need to win this weekend. Like, I'm fucked without wins. And you're telling me that I've got to get one of my best performing backliners out because he missed a bus? And what did he do? Okay. If this is the path we're going down, I will go down this path with you. And he's backed them to the hilt on that. Now, whatever you think about Adam
O'Brien. Every word out of his mouth was standards. All he talked about was standards. There was nothing about wins, losses, football. It was about standards.
Now, we've heard a lot of criticisms about Adam O'Brien over the past few years. And I think one of the reasons we've actually been slightly defensive of him is probably for the same reason we actually get very defensive of Kalyn Ponga. Because are Adam O'Brien and Kalyn Ponga as good as we think that? Probably not. We accept that. Okay? But God knows they get enough criticism where they deserve to have someone in their corner fighting for them. And here's what we do know is that you talk to anybody else who, you know, follows rugby league, and they'll tell you, Adam O'Brien, can't coach, arrogant prick. He's the guy who asked if you know who I am. Oh, he's the guy who's throwing water bottles around. People love to criticize him. Okay, fair enough. But he still exhibited a lot to say that he cares about this club, he cares about these players, and I think that's proof that on the weekend he gave up an opportunity to lock in a win that's going to make his job easier by saying to everyone, all right, let's set standards. That, to me, is leadership.
Couldn't agree more. Could not agree more. That's the stuff that we wanted Adam O'Brien for. He's come from the Roosters in Melbourne, where that stuff is just how it is. That's why we got Adam O'Brien. That's why we were all happy to get Adam O'Brien. That's why Adam O'Brien was recommended by Craig Bellamy and Trent Robinson to the Knights at the time. Because he would come from a system where the standards in the playing group is the most important thing, and that creates the culture, and that then creates the wins and the premierships. His whole four premierships thing was ridiculous. We all laughed about him, mocking for it, but that's what he meant. I've been through four premierships because I know how standards at a club get set. That's another example of it.
I think that's why my hope for next year, as I said, this year, men, I'm counting down the days until the NRLW kicks off, all right? So, you know, for the men this year, my hope is that whatever happens next year, my hope for Adam O'Brien is that he gets to handle his future within his control and with some dignity. So I'm trying to have it both ways with that a little bit in terms of, I think I'm sort of accepting there's every likelihood that there's going to be writing on the wall in terms of the standards we set this year may not result in the wins next year that give him the job in 2025. So I accept that that's a very real possibility. So if it goes that way, I just hope that we're in a scenario where we can thank Adam O'Brien for what he's brought to the club and that the club handles it with the transition and dignity that still allows us to be competitive. But having said that, if we do start to get the wins on the board, I just hope that we finally start to see the coach that you and I genuinely think he is. We genuinely think he's got the tactics, he's got the motivation, he's got the elements there, the history that can do some good for the Newcastle Knights. But whichever way it goes, good or bad, he stays, he goes. I just hope it comes with the dignity that I think he's sort of earned over the past few years, whatever the outcome might be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100% agree. 100% agree. The thing that I like about Adam O'Brien, that in terms of, I think that he will create a culture where if he doesn't, if he loses his job next year, and we do what I think we'll do, and I think we should do, you know, promote from within, the next coach will be riding on his coattails. So the standards and the way the club is run and the expectations of everybody involved in that, in the centre of excellence, is just a direct flow on from Adam O'Brien. And yeah, Adam O'Brien might not quite be the coach for us, but I think I can really see the case that maybe the next coach who has some success goes, well, I learned under Adam and this is the club we were building. You know, he didn't get to finish the job. I'm finishing the job. Yeah. You know, that's what I'm kind of, you know, kind of hoping. And I get the feeling like, yeah, I don't know. I like him. A lot of people don't. Fair enough, you know. He's out, you know, he's a bit like me and you, mate. He runs people the wrong way. He runs people the wrong way like you and I do.
So Brett, in between you, me, Adam O'Brien, Jackson Hastings, you know, we're not everybody's cup of tea, but God damn it, there's some good in there somewhere. And get the fuck on board, people.
But, you know, I just... To me, he's a genuine guy. That's all I want. People are going to hate me for this, but I think Brownie's full of shit. I think he's proven it. He's a fraud. He's a poor coach. Brownie talks a great game. He can't back it up. And let's face it, he nearly destroyed the Warriors club. Like let's not kill ourselves.
Well, you know, it's interesting to see the way that team is performing under Andrew Webster compared to...
Complete rookie.
Yeah, well, they're a completely different team this year. Now, granted, different set of circumstances. Webster's not dealing with COVID. Yada. We get all of that. But Sean, anyway, look, we're not going to turn this into the Brown 53 podcast. Hey, I want to go back to what you were talking about in terms of transition, though, because I want to throw a curveball at you. What would all of that... You know, we've just talked about continuity. We've just talked about coaching setup. We've talked about dignity, this and that. All right, let me put this to you, though. Where does that leave the performance of the team and the ability to coach that team if the club was suddenly to be for sale? Where does that leave the Newcastle Knights?
It throws us better. It throws us better.
If West's group decide that they've had enough of this NRL license thing, and they decide that they want to sell the club. And
have you heard something, Kato? Do you need to tell us something, mate?
So this is speculation. But, yes, we did hear someone asked us about the fact if we'd heard the rumour that the Knights may, in the foreseeable future, be for sale, to which I went, I think you misinterpret having a podcast with having good information, because this is not the look of a man who's familiar with the idea that you're painting to it. But yeah, look, you know, the thing about Newcastle is that everyone's talking rugby league. Everyone's always talking the Newcastle. Even people who hate the Newcastle Knights are talking about the Newcastle Knights. But it came up in conversation that West may be looking to offload the Knights. And when you think about it from a purely economic perspective, over the last few years, it kind of makes sense. You know, the West's group are a lot of things, but they're not a charity organisation for the Newcastle Knights. And they took on the Knights with an idea that they could presumably make money out of the organisation. Well, if that's not happening, they don't necessarily then have to keep the Knights and keep funding the Knights. And I think the sale of the Newcastle Knights would very much hinder and make quite difficult what the men and women are trying to achieve on the field.
Yeah. Well, remember when West were first interested in buying the club, the initial way they were selling it to their own board, like your advocates for it, was that we will get the club back on track, make sure the club doesn't relocate or anything. But we have no intentions of being full-time owners forever. So the idea of them selling it doesn't surprise me. The economic situation coming down the pipe doesn't surprise me, that you want to get rid of an asset that can potentially drain money from your organisation. Because obviously West, you know, they don't run football to make money. They run clubs to make money, and football's just, you know, their brand is in terms of the West Rosellas. I would be a lot more worried about that if Peter Parr wasn't now in charge. So if Phil Gardner was still running the club completely, and yeah, and then he obviously, if he's in the West looking to sell, means that he's distracted by the sale rather than the club.
Mm. But the, yeah, very much so.
You know, so to me, the PA being in charge of the football club alleviates a lot of that. But yeah, it's still certainly going to, you know, some sort of, you know, turmoil, especially if Adam O'Brien continues to be the coach. You know, he's obviously dealing with different people because, you know, he deals with PA, but he obviously deals with Phil Gardner and Wes as well. Just, yeah, the way everything's funded, it's, you know, there's a lot of stuff to sort out there, but yeah, it's certainly an interesting one.
You sort of look at it from an economics perspective in terms of COVID, we still don't know what the long-term sort of implications financially or economically, you know, on a global scale are going to be post-COVID. You know, it was sort of, I'm not going to turn this into the Bay 53 Fin review, but certainly that is, you know, that is a big, that is still a big story to sort of tell. The other thing that sort of comes to mind, though, is that I'm thinking about the CBA at the moment in terms of we still don't have – people tend to forget we still don't have a collective bargaining agreement in place completed. Like, that's still ongoing. And, of course, players are wanting more out of the game to cater for putting their bodies on the line. And so I'm just sort of thinking, like, that's one of the many factors now in terms of the sustainability of rugby league in general is a conversation I think we have to have, because it can't just keep getting bigger. It's going to reach its limit one day. But the more money that wants to be taken out of the game, well, where's that money going to be coming from?
The big and the other big thing is that, you know, in terms of the long-term viability of clubs,
correct,
is the two things. For the sort of, yeah, you know, the idea of the fact that concussion and what that leads to in the future, you know, clubs, people obviously don't want to be liable for what may come down in the future in terms of concussion and head injuries and those sorts of things. But putting that aside, it's the way TV deals are done. Every sport around the world, you know, even huge sports like the Premier League are realizing that normal TV does not have the money to spend, you know, like they currently spend on. On things. So the way the streaming services are taking over, how is that going to look? You know, even a couple like Netflix, which 2 years ago looked like it could print money till the end of time, are now struggling. I think the revenue of rugby league is actually going to decrease in the future. And then in the long term, it'll certainly increase. But I think in the next 5 to 10 years, I actually think the revenue from broadcast is actually going to decrease, and I think that'll be for a lot of sports, and that's obviously gonna be scary for an organization like West, because West have got a board that they've got to answer to. The board's not going to want that liability of going, well, you can't bring down our entire organization for this football club. It's really murky waters. You know, we're not South. We have got Russell Crowe just putting his own money, you know, into it, you know, and things like the Broncos with the float on the stock exchange, and, you know, as much as we think West's a big organization, they're not really, you know. One real major disaster in their, you know, in the way they make money happens to their organization, and West can go under really quickly. So I can understand there'd be some nervous around them, you know.
Well, the only other thing I was going to mention is that the reason that West's might be like this. So the three things that we've highlighted at the moment is the impact of COVID, the long-term viability of the code in terms of where the revenue comes from, the liabilities you're carrying in terms of long-term player injuries, whether it's muscular, skeletal, concussion. The fourth one I want to throw at you, though, Bretto, is that, and this is real tinfoil hat theory, so hear me a bit, is that we've got a Chris Minns government or a new Labor government that's just come in, and certainly there's a lot of talk around the moment in terms of cracking down on pokies revenue. And, of course, one of the things we do know about West Group, love them as the owners of our club, is that they rely quite significantly on pokies revenue. So I'm just wondering if there's that sort of political sort of movement in the background as well in terms of West reading the tea leaves, suddenly seeing all of these pressures that might be mounting, and thinking to themselves, well, maybe now's the time to get out with the Knights. We did what we intended to do with them. We've got them back on their feet. They're established in Newcastle. We might not be if we stay in this long term, we'll probably lose more money than we intended. Now's the time to offload this to the next owner to take them to the so that we can get back to getting our affairs in order.
Yeah, 100% agree. There's no doubt Pokie revenue will decrease. Taxes will be raised on them. There'll be more limitations. The political climate for that is really happening. And as much as the gambling lobby has supreme power in New South Wales, eventually that'll change to the point where, you know, pokers will still be the scourge they are in this state as they've always been. But that'll certainly decrease. You know, clubs like West won't simply be able to print money through poker machines like they currently can. But I also think that West will probably see this as an opportunity. Like, there probably is a buyer out there at the moment. Like, the economy is good enough where, you know, you might be able to find a buyer. In 2, 3, 4 years' time, like, they might be stuck with them for 30 years.
Yeah, you may not have the same options in a few years' time as you would today. Yeah. And someone who buys it today might be your Russell Crowe type entity who's like, yes, I'm happy to do something with this for the next 30 years. I'm sitting on an oil field. I'm not speculating like Nathan Tinkler. No, I've checked the money. Yes, I have the money to do this for the next 30 years. Now's the time for me to do this. So
if anyone wants to fund, we'll run the club. If anyone wants to fund us, we'll run the organization for you.
I'm going to start investing in my future fund for the purchase of the Newcastle Knights by buying lottery tickets weekly starting tomorrow.
Really, really Saudi Arabians listening. the Jets could probably do the buyer too.
I know that the humble sheikhs who run City Football Group are big Bay 53 podcast listeners. So if you're interested in breaking into the rugby league market, the Newcastle Knights are the way to go. We'll even wear sky blue for you. Look, Brett, I mean, time will tell. Like I said, Newcastle loves to talk about rugby league. You know, someone somewhere probably said, oh, you know, the club's rubbish, things are bad, West will probably sell, and it's probably grown from there. I genuinely don't know, but it did surprise me that it sort of came up in conversation.
And by a really good source, you know, it's not like this wasn't just some rando at the pub. Yeah, this was, you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah. Yeah,
it's very reliable source.
Yeah, it's someone I do enjoy talking with, like, intelligent rugby league chatter. It's not like we get on.
And someone with the economic knowledge of the area.
Down the blind, Andrew John. Inside for Albert. Albert will score. Newcastle have won the grand final.
We can't avoid it. At great length, that at the end of the day, we do still talk a fair bit about what the Knights do on the field, despite the two losses in a row. We've got a game this weekend, and Team List Tuesday has come and gone. We've had the teams announced. Lachie Fitzgibbon out, Tyson Frizzell in, otherwise Dan Safidi back into the starting lineup. Do we have any chance against the Panthers this weekend? I guess that's the first question, because I say no. With a but, or I say yes with a maybe.
I don't think we can win this week. You know, we'll lose, but I also don't think we'll get blown out.
And
we actually got the question put to us by the great Maitland Mumbler. You know, have we had enough of courageous losses? And you're 100% right. Courageous losses, we're over them. But if we go down fighting against Penrith, I don't think anyone's going to complain, are we?
I think this has got the feel of the 2021 game against them. You know, we were down on our luck. We put a team out there that sort of, you know, potentially probably wasn't at its best, but they hung tight, they gritted it out, and Stafford Toa, you know, buried Dylan Edwards.
Oh, yeah, yes.
So I kind of feel like it's going to be one of those games where we'll hang with them for a while and they'll probably put a couple of tries on at the end. And, you know, the result will be the result. But I don't think it's going to be like it was last year. I don't think we'll lead at any point. I don't think we'll be competitive. I don't think anybody's going to have a brain snap. But this game feels like I'd give anything for the 2020 draw. Don't get me wrong. But, yeah, this game just feels like it's going to be that 2021 scenario where we'll stick with them and we might have a moment that'll get us on the board. But ultimately, that quality of the Panthers, which – you and I are known haters of the Panthers. Like, we spent years riding Dylan Midwards for the just the mediocre player he is in a great team. And yet it's become undeniable now to accept that this Penrith Panthers team, nay, club, is one of the all-time great rugby league team slash clubs we're going to see in our lifetime, because the way they just move pieces in and out of this team to continuously deliver is, it's quite remarkable to watch.
Yeah, like, it's like Jack Cogger, you know, Jack Cogger's always been talented, but the idea that Jack Cogger could slide into that team and they, you know, they're not what they are with Nathan Cleary, but they're, are they, you know, are they 80% of that team? Probably. Well, that's pretty impressive.
And this is the thing, like, you think about the truly great star players, and we only have to look to Newcastle to think about how poor we are, we were without Andrew Johns, how we're not much better when we lose Kalyn Ponga. Penrith don't do that. They lose their origin caliber halfback. You know, and they should have beaten the North Cowboys up there. I mean, you know, they had a 4-point loss. We only had a 2-point loss, so suck on that. But we had our best players against the Cowboys. But the Panthers, like, they took that to extra time. It almost went to a 90-minute draw. And they're just a team that continues to deliver. And I just don't think – I think a packed crowd out at Penrith, you know, if we do well to sort of stay with them, if we can get a result similar to the loss that we did against the Broncos, I think, unfortunately, that will be mission accomplished for us this weekend.
If we play like we did against the Broncos, we'll won't win, but we'll go close. There's no confidence. But the thing about Penrith is, like, yeah, they move pieces in and out. They don't change a lot. But they have the ability to, so when there's no Cleary, they'll play the same style, but they'll play it more physical, you know. So they'll grind you down.
Yes.
You know, there's games where they're missing some forwards, so they'll play a bit more flamboyant because they know they've got to score points, because they won't control the middle of the field like they can at other times. They're so good at just changing small little things to still be able to, dominate.
Phoenix Crossland actually had probably his best game for the club against Penrith earlier this year. And I'm reminded that because he came up against Mitch Kenny, and you and I were saying at the time that the hooker battle sort of cancelled each other out. The funny thing is that this time around, I think we possibly have a better team. Like, the Knights are a better team this time around than we were.
KP, it helps, obviously.
Correct. That's exactly, I mean, you know, I didn't want to make it too obvious. But no, I think a big inclusion for us this weekend is Dan Saifidi. I'm sort of hoping that he does recover from this sternum injury, which, as you pointed out to me, can be really painful if not sort of handled correctly. Do you reckon Tyson? I mean, we sort of hope as well. Tyson Frizzell has a fairly good run on Wednesday night. You know, plays a good game. Hopefully the Blues win, but he doesn't do himself too much of a mischief.
Yeah, we need Tyson. Yeah, we really need Tyson on one of those edges. Yeah, absolutely.
Kurt Manjack. Yeah, I mean, look, the 1-17 for the Knights is really as you'd expect these days. The only change you'd probably make to that is Lockie Fitzgibbon's out with a concussion, so he may have come in for Lucas. Obviously, you'd prefer Brayley there for Crossland, but Crossland would probably bump Kurt Mann off the bench. Hey, mate, let's talk Origin, though. I mean, we'll brush over the men's game very quickly. I'm assuming that the Maroons will wrap up the series on Wednesday night in Brisbane. Pretty disappointing game one loss by the in Adelaide. No Latrell means no love for New South Wales Blues on Wednesday. That really should be done and dusted this year, yeah?
Yeah, I think Wednesday will win by plenty.
So let's talk about that's the curtain raiser. Let's talk about the main event in Origin. Can our Jesse Southwell-led New South Wales Blues overcome the 10-point deficit up at Townsville to get the series win for New South Wales on Thursday?
Oh, certainly can. I still think you know, we're right in that. Jesse didn't have a best game. I think she'll be a lot better for the run. I like our halves combination better this time with Jesse at 7. Mm. Those girls got plenty of points, and we played probably about as poorly as we'd play in that first Origin, and you know, a few things went against us. I still think they can get the job done.
I got to be honest with you. It's so relieving to see Isabel Kelly in the lineup. I really had genuine concerns about her being Rory Costjason'd when she went off clutching at her throat. Just even thinking about it now, sort of. There's got to be some psychological demons though going on in her head leading into Thursday night. Mate, you've played, you've come back from injuries. What do you do to prepare yourself for the game when you're coming back from a significant injury that you're like, that has the potential to really hold you back? What do you do to just get yourself in the right mindset to go out and play at your best after something like that?
You kind of can't. You've just got to get your wax and get through them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the first few, once you've been whacked a couple of times, you're fine. You know, it's out of your head. I had a really bad shoulder there where for 2 years I couldn't get over it. You know, I had multiple surgeries to fix it and it just wouldn't be right. And then one day I got whacked a few times on it and it didn't hurt as much. And I went, just randomly went, that seems okay. And my confidence all of a sudden came back with it. It's just one of those things where you've just got to, you just got to get through it, get whacked there and just play and just, play on. It's because you're right, it gets in your head. It absolutely gets in your head. And we've seen players, careers really go downhill after that sort of injury because, they can't get it out of their head. But in rugby league, if you're not all in mentally, you're going to get yourself hurt.
Yeah, yeah. And you've always said that consistently. Sort of rugby league is a game where you have to be all in because otherwise you'll be all out. I think moving Jesse into the seven, I know they sort of say the six and seven in the modern game doesn't make that much of a difference, but I just think getting her hands on the ball earlier is just going to make such a big difference. Like, because she really is that generational talent that just sees the game so differently to everybody else. But, whereas you've got the... Because good players need those two things. They've got to see, first of all, they've got to see what they can do. And to this day, I've still never come across a player who saw the game better than Andrew Johns on the field. But the second part is that, and this has been one of our criticisms of Phoenix Crossland, is that he sees the game better than everybody else, but he doesn't translate that into the physical elements of the game to execute it. But that's what Jessie Southwell does. Jessie Southwell has that physical ability to execute what she sees. And, I just think getting the ball in her hands earlier is has the potential to really make the difference to, get those two converted tries ahead and get the Blues the series.
Yeah, absolutely. The more time and space Jessie has with the ball, the better will be. It's actually why I kind of think what you were just saying there about, the ability to see the game. That's why I think Blake Green will be a good coach because he had no physical talents, but he could see the game so well. And then the guys that can see the game so well without actually being able to physically do it are the best coaches.
Yeah. No, I'm sorry. I had to laugh at that one because it's such a funny... It's like, if you think about it, it's such a backhanded compliment to someone. You know what I mean? Like, you obviously know the game, but it's just
multiple premiership winner, and I've said, the most physical game in the world, and today he's got no physical talent.
And it makes me laugh a little bit. Hey, mate, I think we've sort of covered everything that we really intended to tonight. I'm sort of... it's been another interesting couple of weeks to be a Newcastle Knights fan. Yeah, because I was talking with my other half about it the other day, and I was like, can you imagine trying to be a Newcastle Knights and New South Wales Blues fan for 10 years from approximately 2007? It wasn't easy. Like, you were just watching series after series being lost to Queensland. You were watching the Knights pick up spoon after spoon in the NRL. Like, rugby league has just been such a cruel sport to be following if you're a Knights and New South Wales supporter. So, it was funny a couple of weeks ago, because I think we had like a week of three losses in a row where it was the New South Wales men's into the New South Wales women's into the Knights or something like that. And I was just like, fuck this sport, man. Like, why do I still follow it? But, here we are. We're still recording and we're still following. So, I think that's me tapped out for this episode, mate.
I had to check out of the Blues in that period. I didn't watch Origin for a couple of years because, yeah, mixed in with the Knights, I just, yeah.
And you know what the funny thing, was is that the drought-breaking 2014 series, I wasn't even here. I was fucking overseas for the Socceroos in the World Cup. And I and see, this was back in the day when the internet was only just starting to take off. So I had to wake up the next day and fucking go and pump my coins into a coin machine somewhere so I could get 10 minutes of internet access to log on to NRL.com and see Trent Hodkinson raising the finger. Hey, mate, thank you as always for recording. Thanks, everybody else, for listening and listening right through to the end. We do say on behalf of Big T that you are our kind of listener. And, enjoy the rugby league this week, everyone. Go the Knights on the weekend. And, we will talk to you again sooner rather than later.
Thanks, guys.